Mangala Manura Lari.
When her partner's off doing something in reality, his avatar goes kind of slack. The body sits there like an inflatable love doll, and the face continues to go through all kinds of stretching exercises. She does not know what he's doing, but it looks like it must be exciting, because most of the time, he's either extremely surprised or scared shitless. Shortly after he gets done talking to the librarian dude about the aircraft carrier, she begins to hear deep rumbling noises, reality noises, from outside. Sounds like a cross between a machine gun and a buzzsaw. Whenever she hears that noise, Hiro's face gets this astonished look like, I'm about to die. Someone is tapping her on the shoulder. Some suit who has an early morning appointment in the metaverse figures that whatever this courier is doing can't be all that important. She ignores it for a minute. Then Hiro's office goes out of focus, jumps up in the air like it is painted on a window shade, and she's looking into the face of a guy, an Asian guy, a creep, a wirehead, one of the scary antenna dudes. Okay, she says, what do you want? He grabs her by the arm and hauls her out of the booth. There's another one with him, and he grabs her other arm. They all start walking out of there. Let go my fucking arm, she says. I'll go with you. It's okay. It's not the first time she's been thrown out of a building full of suits. This time, it's a little different, though. This time, the bouncers are a couple of life-sized plastic action figures from Toys R Us. And it's not just that these guys probably don't speak English. They just don't act normal. She actually manages to twist one of her arms loose, and the guy doesn't smack her or anything. Just turns rigidly towards her and paws at her mechanically until he's got her by the arm again. No change in his face. His eyes stare like busted headlights. His mouth is open enough to let him breathe through it, but the lips never move. Never change expression. They are in a complex of ship cabins and sliced open containers that acts as the lobby of the hotel. The wireheads drag her out of the door over the blunt crosshairs of the helipad. Just in time, too, because a chopper happens to be coming in for a landing. The safety procedures in this place suck. They could have got their heads chopped off. It is the slick corporate chopper with the Rare logo that she saw earlier. The wireheads try to drag her over a gangplank thingy that leads them across open water to the next ship. She manages to get turned around backward, grabs the railings with both hands, hooks her ankles into the stanchions, and hangs on. One of them grabs her around the waist from behind and tries to yank her body loose while the other one stands in front of her and pries her fingers loose, one at a time. Several guys are piling out of the rear chopper. They are wearing coveralls with gear stuck into the pockets, and she sees at least one stethoscope. They haul big fiberglass cases out of the chopper with red crosses painted on their sides and run into the container ship. YT knows that this is not being done for the benefit of some fat businessman who stroked a lobe over his stewed prunes. They are going in there to reanimate her boyfriend. Raven, pumped, full of speed. Just what the world needs right now. They drag her across the deck of the next ship. From there they take a stairway thingy up to the next ship after that, which is very big. She thinks it's an oil tanker. She can look across its broad deck, through a tangle of pipes, rust seeping through white paint, and see the Enterprise on the other side. That's where they're going. There's no direct connection. A crane on the deck of the Enterprise has swung itself over to dangle a small wire cage over the tanker, just a few feet off the deck. It bobs up and down and glides back and forth over a fairly large area as the two ships rock in different ways and it swings like a pendulum at the end of its cable. It has a door on one side, which is hanging open. They sort of toss her into it head first, keeping her arms pinned to her side so she can't push it away from her, and then they spend a few seconds folding her legs in behind her. It's obvious by now that talking doesn't work, so she just fights silently. She manages to give one of them a good stomp to the bridge of the nose, and both feels and hears the bone break, but the man doesn't react in any way other than snapping his head back on impact. She's so busy watching him, waiting to see when he's going to figure out that his nose is broken and that she's responsible for it, that she stops kicking and flailing long enough to get all shoved into the cage. Then the door snaps shut. An experienced raccoon could get the latch open. This cage isn't made to hold people. But by the time she gets her body worked around to the point where she can reach it, she's 20 feet above the deck, looking down on a lead of black water between the tanker and the Enterprise. Down below, she can see an abandoned Zodiac caroming back and forth between the steel walls. Not everything is exactly right on the Enterprise. Something is burning somewhere. People are firing guns. She's not entirely sure she wants to be there. As long as she is high up in the air, she reconnoiters the ship and confirms that there is no way off, no handy gangplanks or stairway thingies. She is being lowered toward the Enterprise. The cage is careening back and forth, skimming just over the deck on its cable, and when it finally touches the deck, it skids for a few feet before coming to a halt. She pops the latch and climbs out of there. Now what? There's a bullseye painted on the deck, a few helicopters parked around the edges and lashed down. And there is one helicopter, a mammoth twin-engine jet number, kind of a flying bathtub festooned with guns and missiles, sitting right in the middle of the bullseye, all of its lights on, engine whining, rotors spinning desultorily. A small cluster of men is standing next to it. YT walks toward it. She hates this. She knows this is exactly what she's supposed to do, but there really is no other choice. She wishes profoundly that she had her plank with her. The deck of this aircraft carrier is some of the best skating territory she has ever seen. She has seen in movies that carriers have big steam catapults for throwing airplanes into the sky. Think of what it would be like to ride a steam catapult on your plank. As she is walking toward the helicopter, one of the men standing by it detaches himself from the group and walks toward her. He's big, with a body like a 55-gallon drum, and a mustache that turns up at the corners. And as he comes toward her, he is laughing in a satisfied way, which pisses her off.
"Well, don't you look like a forlorn little thing," he says. "Shit, honey, you look like a drowned rat that got dried out again."
"Thanks," she says. "You look like chiseled spam."
"Very funny," he says.
"Then how come you're not laughing? Afraid it's true?"
"Look," he says, "I don't have time for this fucking adolescent banter. I grew up and got old specifically to get away from this."
"It's not that you don't have time," she says. "It's that you're not very good at it."
"You know who I am?" he asks.
"Yeah, I know. You know who I am?"
"YT, a 15-year-old courier,
and personal buddy of Uncle Enzo," she says, whipping off the string of dog tags and tossing them. He holds out one hand startled, and the chain whips around his fingers. He holds them up and reads them.
"Well, well," he says. "This is quite a little memento."
He throws them back at her.
"I know you're buddies with Uncle Enzo. Otherwise, I just would have dunked you instead of bringing you here to my spread. And I frankly don't give a shit," he says, "because by the time this day is through, either Uncle Enzo will be out of a job, or else I'll be, as you said, chiseled spam. But I figure that the big wop will be a lot less likely to throw a stinger through the turbine of my chopper there if he knows his little Chiquita's on board."
"It's not like that," Whitey says. "It's not a relationship we're fucking is part of it." But she is chagrined to learn that the dog tags, after all this time, did not have any magical effect on the bad guys. Rife turns around and starts walking back to the chopper. After a few steps, he turns back and looks at her, just standing there, trying not to cry.
"You coming?"
he says. She looks at the chopper, a ticket off the raft.
"Can I leave a note for Raven?"
"Far as Raven is concerned, I think you already made your point." "Come on, girl, we're wasting jet fuel over there. That ain't good for the goddamn environment."
She follows him to the chopper, climbs on board. It's warm and light inside here. with nice seats, like coming in off a hard February day of thrashing the grittier highways and settling into a padded easy chair.
"Had the interior redone," Rife says. "This is a big old Sov gunship, and it wasn't made for comfort. But that's the price you pay for all that armor plating."
There's two other guys in here. One is about 50, sort of gaunt, big pores, wire-rimmed bifocals, carrying a laptop, a techie. The other is a bulky African-American with a gun.
"YT?" says the always polite L. Bob Rife.
"Meet Frank Frost, my tech director, and Tony Michaels, my security chief."
"Ma'am," says Tony.
"Howdy," says Frank.
"Suck my toes," says YT.
"Don't step on that, please," Frank says.
YT looks down. Climbing into the empty seat nearest the door, she has stepped on a package resting on the floor. It's about the dimensions of a phone book, but irregular, very heavy, swaddled in bubble pack and clear plastic. She can see glimpses of what's inside. Light reddish-brown in color, covered with chicken scratches, hard as a rock.
"What's that?" YT says.
"Homemade bread from Mom?"
"It's an ancient artifact," Frank says, all pissed off. Rife chuckles, pleased and relieved that YT is now insulting someone else. Another man duck walks across the flight deck in mortal fear of the whirling rotor blades and climbs in. He's about 60, with a dirigible of white hair that was not ruffled in any way by the downdraft.
"Hello, everyone," he says cheerfully. "I don't think I've met all of you. Just got here this morning, and now I'm on my way back again."
"Who are you?"
Tony says. The new guy looks crestfallen.
"Greg Ritchie," he says.
Then, when no one seems to react, he jogs their memory.
"President of the United States."
"Oh, sorry. Nice to meet you, Mr. President," Tony says, extending his hand. "Tony Michaels."
"Frank Frost," Frank says, extending his hand and looking bored.
"Don't mind me," YT says, when Ritchie looks her way. "I'm a hostage."
"Torque this baby," Rife says to the pilot. "Let's go to L.A. We got a mission to control."
The pilot has an angular face that, after her experiences on the raft, YT recognizes as typically Russian. He starts dicking with his controls. The engines whine louder, and the thwacking of the chopper blades picks up. YT feels, but does not hear, a couple of small explosions. Everyone else feels it too, but only Tony reacts. He crouches down on the floor of the chopper, pulls a gun out from under his jacket, and opens the door on his side. Meanwhile, the engines sigh back down in pitch, and the rotor coasts back down to an idle. YT can see him out the window. It's Hero. He's all covered with smoke and blood, and he's holding a pistol in one hand. He's just fired a couple of shots in the air to get their attention, and now he backs behind one of the parked choppers, taking cover.
"You're a dead man," Rife shouts. "You're stuck on the raft, asshole. I got a million myrmidons here. You gonna kill them all?"
"Swords don't run out of ammo," Hero shouts.
"Well, what do you want?"
"I want the tablet. You give me the tablet, then you can take off and let your million wireheads kill me. You don't give me the tablet, I'm gonna empty this clip into the windshield of your chopper."
"It's bulletproof," Rife says.
"No, it isn't," Hero says, "as the rebels in Afghanistan found out."
"He is right," the pilot says.
"Fucking Soviet piece of shit.
They put all that steel in its belly and then made the windshield out of glass?"
"Give me the tablet," Hero says, "or I'm taking it."
"No, you ain't," Rife says, "'cause I got Tinkerbell here."
At the last minute, YT tries to duck down and hide so he won't see her. She's ashamed. But Hero locks eyes with her for just a moment, and she can see the defeat come into his face. She makes a dive for the door and gets halfway out under the downblast of the rotors. Tony grabs her coverall's collar and hauls her back inside. He shoves her down on her belly and puts one knee in the small of her back to hold her there. Meanwhile, the engine is powering up again, and out the open door, she can see the steel horizon of the carrier's deck drop from view. After all this time, she fucked up the plan. She owes Hero a refund. Or maybe not. She puts the heel of one hand against the edge of the clay tablet and shoves as hard as she can. It slides across the floor, teeters on the threshold, and spins out of the chopper. Another delivery made. Another satisfied customer.